November 19th. I went to see Krista just as soon as I got back into Toronto. We'd been living together out in Vancouver for a while, and then Krista's mother got sick, and so she flew back home, and she stayed. She called me and said she'd got her old job back as the night dispatcher at Mr. Pietelli's cab company. She couldn't find any work in Vancouver, and she thought it was because she's in a wheelchair most of the time, and so she got more and more, like, depressed. I knew she was depressed, but I didn't want to talk about it in case she'd get even more depressed. That's why. But anyway, she called. She had her old job back, and she was back living with her father, too. Her old bedroom with the oversized bathroom and the wheelchair lift on the stairs and the ramp outside, she'd gone right back. So I jumped in her car and drove all the way across from Vancouver to talk to her, smarten her up, and, like, give her hell.
Hi.
Hi. Well, give me a kiss.
Oh, jeez, I missed you like crazy.
I missed you, too. Oh, I missed you, too.
Well, I didn't give her hell, but we had this long talk. Krista always likes to have long talks, even though they never change anything.
Look, you got a job out there without even trying. You finished your novel.
321 pages, counting the title page.
Yeah. You've just turned 20, Walker. You can do anything you want. You should do everything you want. I think really great things are going to happen. Maybe you'll be famous or something.
Yeah.
And anyway, I'm like 26. And I've spent most of my life in a wheelchair, except when I'm hobbling around on crutches. And I can't get a job unless my father twists somebody's arm.
Jeez.
Would you listen?
I'm listening.
Okay. I just think... I didn't realize how looked after I'd been all my life, that's all. Until now. I thought I was this real independent, gutsy person who was just like everybody else.
You are.
No, I'm not. I'm not. And I'm not going to pretend in my head anymore that I am. So, anyway, I can make a life for myself right here. And it'll be a neat life, too. But it's not a life for you, Walker. It's not you. So, I'll get on with things, okay? It's no big deal, but I need you to get out of my way right now. That's the best thing you could do for me. So, go, Walker, okay? There's the door, okay? Just go.
No.
Why not?
Because. One, everything you just said isn't really true. Two, I love you, Krista.
I know. I love you too.
So, what are we gonna do? We can't live here.
Walker?
Yeah.
One, everything I just said is true. And two, I'm pregnant.
My whole life's like that. Just when I think I'm in control, somebody throws me a curve.
Walker, where are you now?
Yo, Krista.
Yo, Walker.
Just dropped off a fare Christie near the park.
Okay, go to 1248 Dufferin. I'll be waiting in the lobby.
You okay? You're not too tired.
I'm fine, Walker.
You sure? It's a big responsibility being a father. Or not being a father. Krista hasn't made up her mind yet. Well, it's 1993, I guess. You can make up your mind after the fact. Right. She makes up her mind. Meanwhile, I don't count. I'm like, just the father. So, I was thinking about all this, and I was cruising down Yonge Street. saw her. She was standing near the curb, surrounded by packages. I could see, even at a distance, that she was, like, gorgeous. She had on a long black leather coat, belted tightly at the waist, and really high heels on her boots, and her hair was swept back and as black as the leather coat. And suddenly, there was this tall guy beside her. He waved at a cab coming the other way. The cab made a U-turn and pulled up in front of them. She looked through the window at the driver, and then he drove on.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you help me with my package, please?
She was even more gorgeous close up. Huge brown eyes and lipstick as red as blood.
Where'd your friend go?
Friend?
The guy who waved me down?
Oh, from the store. He wanted to help me, too.
Hmm.
You have a lovely city here, Jess.
Yeah, well, it's okay. It's supposed to be world class, whatever that means.
It's lovely. I learned it already. Junk Street, Eaton Center.
So you just moved here, eh? Where from?
Where from? Oh, from Paris.
Paris? Oh, jeez. I don't know. Some of my favorite writers, they wrote their best stuff in Paris.
Paris?
Well, if I were you, I would have stayed. In fact, one day I hope to go there.
Is this a smoke car?
What? Oh, yeah. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, one day I hope to go over there myself, just hang out, you know, like James and Joyce or one of those guys.
Would you like one?
Well, I usually roll my own, but sure, thanks.
I light it for you. Jess?
Okay. So anyway, Paris sounds great to me.
There.
Hmm. Thanks.
You're a writer, then.
Well, I am.
I had a lover once. He was a writer. He was very... how did you say?
Passionate?
No. Something impetuous, yes? Running off here and there. His name was Javier. He wore sandals. Even in the winter. Even when it snowed. And a floppy old hat. A fedora. Yes. Always that same old hat. I miss him very much.
Sometimes she'd catch my eyes in the mirror and smile back at me. We stopped in front of this giant-sized house. She looked around for a moment, then walked quickly to the front door and opened it. I followed her in, carrying the packages. She flipped on a light. The house was empty.
And this is the, how should I say, living room?
It's huge.
Did you like the furniture?
It's modern.
Yes, it's very modern. My husband arrives tomorrow, and then we'll go back to Jung Street and buy everything. Until then, we'll just pretend. I like to pretend. Would you like to pretend, Walker? I said your name right. Walker?
Yeah.
You're a writer. So, you must like to pretend also. I think so. Why did you look so serious? Are you sad?
No.
Good. Come on then. I'll show you my favorite thing in all this place.
Okay.
We went through these glass doors, and there was a pool all under glass with underwater lights.
Pretty?
Yes.
I like to keep it like this. I think, with the lights off, you can see everywhere. And it's more, what, private?
Yes.
Just stay here. Don't move. I'll bring you something.
Well, I don't know. I'm, like, working, and I should really be...
Walker, please. Don't be unpredictable. I'll just be 1 minute. Moment. Yes?
And then she left. And then she came back with 2 drinks on a tray.
No furniture. But the important things I look after right away.
What is it?
Salt. Lime. Tequila.
And I protested a lot because I was working and because I was thinking of Krista. And then...
Okay, watch Whoa. This. Belly flop!
I give up!
It seemed like one thing led to another, kind of on its own. Her name was Laura.
Here I come.
She wanted to inaugurate the swimming pool. And the next thing I knew, she was standing behind me in a bathing suit that was hardly even there at all and handing me this slingshot thing. And I mean, what was I supposed to do, run? So I went behind a wall and changed, and when I got back, she was already in the dark pool, shimmering like a mysterious fish, and the water was really warm.
He's kind of you to swim with me, Walker.
Oh, well, I should go soon, though. I have this relationship.
Pardon?
I have this girlfriend. That's so funny.
You're funny. You're sweet and funny.
Oh.
I'm not going to attack you.
Oh.
You walker. Come on. Let's see who can swim the most fast. Come on.
I mean, swimming the most fast. Or maybe she let me win. And then we were out of breath, and so we rested by the edge of the pool, and her legs floated up, and we talked.
Righty. That's a big responsibility.
Well, I've never thought about it like a responsibility.
Oh, it is. You make an imaginary world. You fool so many people. And they make you a hero. If in your books you write all the things the people want to believe about themselves, about their lives, you give them, how do you say, like a pill to take. And you divert them from their misery, and they think you are like them too. But they can't see into your heart. The people, they say he celebrates us. But they don't know.
And suddenly her gorgeous face, it was like a mask, and it fell away. Hard cheekbones and eyes and just pain, like a flash of lightning. And then it was gone. She smiled and drifted off a little across the water and then smiled again, as beautiful as ever. But I knew something, whatever we were doing or not doing, was over.
Good night, Walker.
Night. Thanks for the, the tequila.
Thank you for being my friend.
Yeah.
She closed the front door of the house, and that was that. My heart felt kind of sick because she was really something. Laura. And because of how quickly I'd forgotten Krista, too. Well, I hadn't really forgotten her. I just kind of moved her over a little. I adjusted the seat and mirror, backed out of the driveway, and drove away.
Walker, come in. Walker. Walker, where are you?
Yo, Krista.
Where have you been? I've been trying to raise you for over an hour.
I got hungry. I went in somewhere to eat.
You're supposed to report that.
Sorry.
Bring the cab in right now.
Why? I just started my shift.
Because the cops are looking for it. That's why.
Why?
I don't know. Just get it in here.
I stopped the car. I was only about a block and a half from Laura's place. The mirror and the driver's seat, now it registered. They were both a little out of place when I got back in the cab. I flipped the hood lock and got out. It was a cool November night. I lifted the hood to check the engine. Like I said, I'd only gone a few hundred feet. The engine block was too hot to touch. By the time I turned around and driven halfway back to her house, I could see a car backing out of the garage in a hurry and then speed away. I switched off my AP cab sign and followed. Through Leaside, along Laird Drive, then a right turn into a kind of industrial park full of one-story buildings. The car turned down a laneway. I pulled off to the side and killed my lights. It stopped by a side door of an old warehouse surrounded by weeds, and then Laura got out. A tall man, the same guy who flagged me down on Young Street, came out of the door, got in the car, and drove around behind the building. Laura, the delicious and deceptive Laura, looked around for a moment, then opened the door and disappeared.
Hi. So what's wrong with the cab?
Why's your hair wet?
Pardon?
I said...
Monica, where the hell you been? They gotta be cop in the city looking for you.
And why is your hair wet?
Oh, hi, Mr. Piattelli.
Look at him. He just gets back to some mountain someplace. I give him his job back right away, there's trouble.
Vancouver.
Yeah, so what? I want to know if there's any damage to my car.
No, so what's the problem? Like...
Hello there, Walker.
Oh, Inspector Kitts. Jeez, what are you doing here?
Looking for you.
Oh.
Where were you, Walker? Because you could be in real trouble.
Yeah, I know. Well, I was swimming.
Swimming? What? With who?
It was awkward, especially like why I was where I was in the first place, in the swimming pool with Lara. And the more I thought about it, the more it really burned me up, because she was looking for someone just like me standing out there on Yonge Street, like somebody really stupid. It was hard to tell whether Krista understood what I was trying to say, explain. She just looked at me with her blue eyes and just kept looking. I felt really small. Inspector Kiss said, there's someone I want you to meet.
Andres Becerra.
Yes? This is Walker Devereaux.
Hi.
Walker's the driver of the cab.
No, the man, it's not the man. The man was taller, dark.
Right. Well, you're off the hook with me, Walker. Maybe not with Piattelli or your young friend.
Mr. Becerra, if you don't mind, like, what happened?
Am I going to be interrogated now by a cab driver?
Sorry.
What does it look like? Are you blind? I was hit viciously. I don't know how many times. Dragged out of a cab and beat about the head.
Yeah, it was too bad.
Too bad, you say? Inspector, whatever your name is, if you have not found Eduardo Gaba by tomorrow morning, safe and unharmed, you will have an international incident of enormous proportions on your hands. The entire world will be in shock, scandalized.
Right.
Eduardo Gaba? You don't mean Eduardo Gaba, the writer. He was here this week. He was at Harborfront giving a reading. I tried to get in. It was too crowded.
My God. Culture. In the wilderness.
Fabulous. What the hell is that?
In Passager. It's a kind of writing. It's what Eduardo Gaba is. His stories are like fables. They don't obey the normal laws of nature. Dead people talk to relatives. Magical transformations take place, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah?
He nearly won the Nobel Peace Prize, like for literature. Lots of times.
For writing fables.
There's more to them than that. They're all about the common people of Chile, how they live, how, despite their poverty, they have, like, a really rich spiritual life. In some ways, they are much more alive than the people who rule them, and so the laugh is always on the officials and the rich people. And so, people like me, we think it's just the eternal human condition, you know, because it's such great writing. And the people themselves, they say, he is one of us. He celebrates our lives. And it's sort of like a pill everyone takes. And nothing changes.
Walker, who told you that?
Nobody. I got a brain too, you know.
Yeah, but the mermaid who was keeping you busy so her friends could borrow your cab, you know, as you were paddling around, what'd you two talk about?
Real estate, like furniture for the house and stuff. Yeah, they must have hotwired the cab. I had the key.
Yeah, they're very slick. The celebrated Eduardo Gaba. Here's a picture of him, by the way. Looks like Santa Claus.
I know.
He goes to a house party thrown in his honor by fellow expatriate Chileans and other admirers. And he arrives with his faithful secretary, that little twit in the house, but...
Yeah.
Now, the house is jammed with people. At 10:30, as is his custom... The great man asked for a cab to be called. He always retires by 11. Not much of a playboy, but down when he is 70. Someone calls a cab. No one's sure. And a minute or two later, an AP cab pulls up, and the old man and his secretary pull away. Now, the cabbie drives down a lane, and he stops. Some men with hoods over their faces steal the writer and leave the secretary bleeding on the ground. And I do have a rather nasty international incident on my hands. And you know what? So far, my only lead is the woman who rented the empty house and suckered the cabbie.
She didn't say anything about all that. She didn't say anything at all. It was about 1:30 in the morning by the time Inspector Kiss dropped me off at my rooming house on Pembroke Street. I waited for 10 minutes, then walked back up to Dundas and looked for a cab. I don't know exactly why I didn't say anything. Something to do with the fact that I'd seen Inspector Kiss call out a SWAT team once before, and I was afraid to think of them descending on that warehouse near Leaside and Laura. And something to do with Laura. What I'd seen in her face, while all I saw in that secretary's face was hate. What did she want with Eduardo Gala anyway? I didn't know. And I really didn't know what I was doing standing back at that dark warehouse I'd seen Laura go in either, or what I was looking for when I crept along the sidewall and up a drain pipe to peek into the one faintly lighted window in the place. There was a bare light bulb hanging down from the ceiling, and sitting in a chair right below it was the great writer, Eduardo Gava. His hair was full and silver white, falling over the collar of his rainbow-colored shirt. His beard was full and flowing white, too. And red, streaked with blood. He fixed his gaze at the floor and rubbed his brow with a slender, delicate hand. At first I thought he was alone, and then I could see, just at the edge of the light, about a dozen people, men and women, seated too, in a large circle around Eduardo Gava, watching him in silence. And then Laura entered the circle of light. And her face was all hard cheekbones and eyes and pain. And she held a sheaf of papers up to him. But Eduardo Gava just hunched in his chair and looked away. And then, the tall man who had flagged down my cab on Young Street, who had hidden Laura's car behind the building, who had probably driven my cab for all I knew, was standing by the drainpipe, directly below, looking up at me.
Why, Walker?
I wanted to see you again.
You put yourself in such great danger. You foolish, stupid...
No.
Oh, Walker. I don't know what I should do with you.
You could tell your friends to let me go. Maybe. And Eduardo Gava, too. Whatever he's done. You got your revenge. It looks like you broke his nose.
Broke his nose? Huh. Terrible cruelty, Jess. He's been condemned to death, Walker. By the people. His old man's throat. He will smile from ear to ear this night.
Oh, jeez.
What's the matter? Are the ropes too tight?
No, it's not that.
You look at me in such a way, Walker. Eduardo Gava. Before he was a writer.
A great artist, a genius, that old man in the next room, and he's bleeding. I don't know how you can...
Shh. A great genius. Yes. We don't deny. But before, what was he? An important man. A faithful party worker for Allende and his socialist government 22 years ago. Except he was not. He was an informer. And during the general's coup when Salvador Allende was murdered, he was put under house arrest in Santiago. Except he was not. He traveled to remote villages under another name, undisguised. It seems he had a taste for the art of torture as much as writing. And the generals indulged him. Political detainees, men, women, children. All came under his special attention. Unspeakable things were done. Do you understand, Walker?
Yes.
Most died. Some survived. A few are even here in this building with us. And, yes, Eduardo Gava went on to be a great writer. And he wrote about the people.
And he became famous the world over for his sympathetic portrayals. What's the matter, Walker? Evil and great art are not incompatible in the same souls, you know.
But they are. I mean, they have to be, don't they? If anything's to make sense.
Oh, Walker. If only we could make the world so clear, so just, as my Walker would like it to be. I'd be happy to.
You don't make the world anything better, more just by murdering him. You know that better than I do. I know you do.
Here. In your quiet life, you don't understand.
Laura left me, and then, after a few minutes, an old Chilean Indian lady opened the storage room door, smiled sweetly, and untied me. She had all these wrinkles on her face and the kindest smile. She offered me something to drink and nodded. I took it from her, nodded back, said thanks, drank. That's the last thing I remember. Until I woke up at the foot of Ludi Avenue on the beach by the lifeguard station. It was 9 o'clock in the morning. My head felt huge. I zigzagged slowly up to Queen Street looking for a streetcar, and this cop car pulled up.
Sit down, Walker. What's the matter? Tied one on, did we?
I thought you were a clean living kid. Well, you know what you need? You need a drink. No. Really, it's the best thing for you. Take it from someone who knows. Here. There you go. Attaboy. Do you the world a good. Well, Walker, we found him.
You did?
Yeah, we got a tip way the hell out near Pickering in this field. There was this tree, you know, on a hill. He was under it.
Dead?
No. He's okay, so to speak. Weird, though. They shaved off all his hair and his beard. Hardly recognized the guy. Yeah, he was just sitting there, tied up to the tree, staring off into nothing, bald as an egg.
Oh, jeez.
He had a note pinned to his shirt. It's a woman's handwriting.
What's it say?
Well, here, you look. I can't make it out myself.
The world as it should be.
Cryptic, eh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Then why are you smiling?
So, anyway, Krista's not speaking to me. She said...
You know what the trouble with you is, Walker? I'll tell you. You don't know what you want.
And Mr. Piatelli said...
What you did going into that house, you know what that's called? A dereliction of duty.
And Laura... Laura, the papers say Eduardo Gava is still devastated by these bizarre events. Yes, and discredited and naked now, too, in the eyes of his countrymen for all time. And Laura is in Paris, or Rome, somewhere. And wherever she goes, I think there is some great